Well, as you regular folks know, that I've been kind of doing a series on philosophy, physics, and on just the kind of ineffable wonder of life and of existence. And today is no exception to this examination of flights of fancy and philosophy, and where fancy and philosophy meet together. I've spoken often kind of in passing of Plato and the Platonic idea of a pyramid. And the pyramid, as Plato almost expressed it, as a base where you have magic for the millions and philosophy for the few. And everybody gets the metaphor immediately. All you have to do is look at the ratings of certain movies and other movies, and you see that pyramid going from the base, and I mean the base in both senses of the word, up towards the apex. And we understand when we look at society that there are large numbers of people who get things, information, ideas, using certain metaphors and in certain ways and styles, and then you move up that pyramid towards an apex of smaller numbers. I think we misunderstand the metaphor of the pyramid when we assume that the apex is necessarily superior to the base. Some people look at that metaphor and say, well, obviously it's true. You know, all the dumb people are watching Fox. Okay, I'll name it. All the dumb people are watching Fox, and all the smart people are watching PBS and Masterpiece Theater. And from that, you can draw conclusions about popularity and quality. That's not necessarily the case. We get the metaphor, but we sometimes misunderstand the metaphor, because a pyramid is made up of a base and of an apex. And if you don't have the base, you won't have an apex. And if you don't have an apex, it won't be a pyramid. All of us learn in various kinds of ways. And it is not the case that philosophy is superior to fantasy. It's different, but it's not necessarily superior. It does not make me a better person because I read Sartre and others can't, pun intended, and nor does it make me a better person that I can read philosophy while others read Aesop's Fables. Those aren't the critical issues. The critical issues are that we understand within that pyramid there are all different kinds of ways of being and of learning. If pure reason were automatically better than fantasy, than fable, if mathematics were not different but better than Aesop's Fables or the Bible, why would Plato and Socrates, through Plato, write in metaphors, in parables, using images, using dialogues? We need all of the ways of learning, all of the ways of seeing and trying to express our sense of wonder at this amazing life that we lead, at this amazing incarnation that each of us shares in the light for such a brief time. The expression of wonder that escapes the net of our words, but maybe we can sing it, maybe we can dance it. And the songs and the dances and the poems are as important as the science, as the reason, and as the math. Socrates was esteemed to be the wisest man in Athens because he said that the only thing that he knew was that he didn't know anything. Now, people didn't agree on what that meant. So much for fundamentalism, taking it literally. Some people said, wow, what a dummy, he doesn't know anything. Others said, well, just a second, might he know something and not know that he knows something? And so that would actually make him wrong, because he does know something, he just doesn't know it. This is why lots of people don't like reading philosophy, because this can make you completely crazy with its irrelevance to life. Maybe it was an expression of the rarest of all human traits, humility. The idea that we can know exactly what somebody means, exactly what a book or a fable means, I think is arrogant, that we mistake the metaphor for the substance when we try to be fundamentalistic about Socrates, or about Aesop, or about the Bible, or about the Constitution. There is room for some humility in the ways that we try to understand and express what we know and how we know it. I can go to a dance recital and I don't know what it means, but I may feel it. I can go to a concert and does the Ninth Symphony of Beethoven mean something, or does it take me somewhere? The idea to me of this pyramid of ideas that Plato proposed, talking about the things at the bottom that he said were the material, were the temporal, were the things that kind of wear out and are only kind of around for a little bit of time, and then the inductive and the scientific going up to philosophy, and then at the apex, math, which is eternal, and why I'll never reach the apex of the pyramid, because I am innumerate, which is mathematically illiterate. I can't add up a column of figures or solve 3x equals 15, find x. I know the answer, but I can't solve it. There's a difference. And that becomes important in the final paragraph of this sermon. I know the answer, but I can't solve the answer and show my work. There is so much arrogance that we human beings demonstrate about our understanding of things, where we assume the hierarchy, the superiority of the apex over the base. The important test of what we know, of what we is what we do. When Thomas Jefferson received a letter, a hero of Unitarians everywhere, when Thomas we banished him as the name of one of our districts because of some moral anachronisms that we decided to judge him by. But Jefferson said, when he received this letter commending a particular religion to him, that if your religion, whatever it is, makes you a better person, I'm all in favor of it. That's the test. Whether we are motivated and moved by a Bible story, or by Aesop's fables, by the wonder of the patterns that we see in mathematics, or in the stars, the wonders of physics, or astronomy, or human life, all of these things can touch us, can move us. The great issue is not simply the issue of intellect as a hierarchy. I'm not dismissing it, obviously, because I'd be dismissing it to the very wrong room. But I am saying that we have so many channels to take in and understand the world that we live in. We have so many ways of being touched, informed, and moved that when we look at issues of value, we have to look at what all of these things help us to do. When we read the paper, there's an old metaphor for you, where we get our news, We get our news and we look at a world that has seemingly gone mad, as the world has always seemingly gone mad, which may actually mean that the world is really quite mad. And we see all of the anger and all of the arrogance and the condescension and the putting down and the putting off of the other, of people who don't see things the way a certain group, another group, sees things. We look at all of that arrogance that only I understand the Bible. Doesn't just apply to religion. I lived on a street with four psychoanalysts when I was growing up, and therefore, only I understand Freud. You're completely wrong. Our arrogance is possible in every part of our lives, from the mundane to the intellectual. Maybe only in mathematics is it, not even true if you're following the story of what's gone on in England right now with a murder of a mathematician. It can get pretty tough in academic politics, too. We all have this impulse to a sense of arrogance at every place on the pyramid. When you look at people arguing religion, and you look and you see that there are 1,500 different fundamentalist groups that read the Bible literally and don't agree on what it says, you know that you've got a problem. When you see that there are as many interpretations of the Constitution as there are people interested in the Constitution, what do these words in English mean? Or Scalia would ask, what was the intent of the people that wrote them? And only I know what the intent was. That's arrogance. That's condescension. I think we end up so many times fighting about our interpretations, even of metaphors. We end up fighting not about substance, but about how we express our sense of connection to the world and our sense of connection to each other. It's difficult to look at political debates and not feel a little bit discouraged. It's difficult to go to scientific and even philosophical forums and see how we argue and fight and not feel a bit discouraged. The idea that there's only one truth or one way to understand and one meaning, I think, is a terrible error that all of us are impelled towards, because it's so difficult to understand and accept a multiplicity of truths. We think of a truth to be exclusive. If I have a truth and you claim another one, one of us needs to be right and one of us needs to be wrong. One of us needs to win, one of us needs to lose. It's very difficult to live in a community with that attitude. It's very difficult to live in a home with that attitude. And so much of history is people who believe that 2 plus 2 equals 4, looking at people who say 3 plus 1 equals 4 and saying, you're a heretic. Your 4 is vastly inferior to mine. In fact, you don't understand 4 at all. And the only thing that we can agree on is those people who believe that 5 minus 1 is 4 ought to be exterminated because they have a negative attitude. This is madness. We look at the world right now and we see kind of fundamentalists of all stripes who look at their religions and say, this is what you got to do. This is what you must believe. These are the rituals that you must follow. Your arms are uncovered. And whether I'm an ultra-Orthodox Haredi or I'm an ultra-Orthodox Al-Qaeda, I'm going to spit on you. Misses the point of religion. My wife has this wonderful line that she came up with just kind of by herself and said, you know, the fundamental problem with so many fundamentalists is they forget the fundamentals. The fundamentals of justice, going back to Socrates, maybe when he said the only thing he knew was that he didn't know anything, it was an expression of humility, an expression of saying, I don't know everything, and neither do you. And finally, with Jefferson, once more, looking and understanding that religion is not what you believe. Religion is not in the ritual. It is not in those people in old Russia who got into a civil war between those that crossed themselves with two fingers and those who crossed themselves with three fingers. It's not about the rituals. The rituals are reminders of how to be in the world. They are not a replacement for being decent in the world. Our philosophies, our religions, our myths, our fables are all open to interpretation, and we are radically responsible for what we interpret and what we do with it. Because until these things find expression in our actions, they're relatively meaningless. When they do find expression in our actions, they are important and they are moral or immoral choices. From the Bible to Aesop to Socrates to Principia Mathematica, we are consumers of fact, of science, and of metaphor. We make a mixture of all of these things. The pyramid needs the base, the fables, the stories, and moving up towards the arts and towards the sciences and towards the philosophy. But they're all in a unity. And no natural superiority at any one part. We need to be committed to taking our world, taking our information, taking our inspiration, and turning it towards decency. That's the great religious and philosophical imperative. Does our philosophy, does our religion, do our arts move us towards being better? Better people by ourselves, better people with each other, and better people for each other. Those are the great philosophical questions. Not simply the abstract, but the very personal. How shall I take this, and what shall I do with it today? What shall we do with it today? How shall we be in the world? How shall we engage a world sometimes mad, a world of great beauty, a world of tremendous ideas, a world of some bad metaphors? Well, the early sages, when they looked at Scripture, did not intend for it to be taken literally by everyone. It kind of missed the point. When you look at the great Scriptures, they're kind of divided into three parts, but the borders are indistinct. Some is history, some is law, and some is metaphor. Discuss, engage, think, choose, listen, act. Because ultimately, we are what we do.